WUSB 90.1 FM Stony Brook. Welcome to this edition of the Healthy Planet radio program. My name is Bob DiBenedetto, your host for one of the most interesting times of your life. And it is right in front of us, right now. The Healthy Planet focuses on topics that will help to educate you about the deep connection among all life on Earth and the powerful effects your everyday choices can have on creating a clean, healthy, and compassionate world. And that is what we all want. Well, here we are, 1 month after our last show. Many of you who usually hear us in your cars driving home from work are now likely listening from home. And that's because most of the country has gone into lockdown, due to, of course, the coronavirus. I, too, am home. I'm recording this show from home. This is a really stressful time for many of you. The threats of getting sick or having loved ones sick, together with the stress of being isolated and the stress of being out of work, perhaps being low on food, having difficulty shopping, can all wreak havoc on your mental well-being. While these are objective and worthy concerns, I'm going to encourage you to stay strong and stay the course for just a little bit longer so we can get over this episode in a way that lasts. I'll also suggest, as hard as it might be, to occasionally take a deep breath or two or three to break the tension now and then. And you can start right now, even while I'm speaking. I'll repeat a quote that I mentioned in our last show, and I think it's just fit for these times. That is, worrying doesn't take away tomorrow's problems. It takes away today's peace. We can spend 24/7 worrying, or we can spend some time fostering some peace and bringing, perhaps, a little bit of peace and appreciation into our lives in this moment. We can appreciate the very fact that right here we can sit and take a deep breath, while people who have this disease have trouble doing so. Now, I've been watching this virus outbreak pretty closely, and I've been seeing a lot of connections potentially coming out of this whole horrible episode that I think could have the power to really transform our society and to make future outbreaks of this sort a whole lot less likely. On this evening's show, I'm basically going to attempt to connect some dots that will hopefully help you to understand why we are where we are, and how we can avoid this in the future. And while these are indeed hard times, it's also a time for us to perhaps pause, re-examine how we got here, and think about how we might be willing to live just a little bit differently going forward to avoid this kind of tragedy, as well as so many others that our world is facing. Let me start on the right side of the brain before sharing a lot of information. On this show, we've talked a lot about the connection among all life, and some see that as a conceptual discussion. I think the coronavirus episode is showing us just how real those connections are. Whether you're a religious or a spiritual person or an atheist, it's worth noting just how connected we really are. Depending on your background, you might think about this connection in a number of different ways. You might think of us all being brothers and sisters, or you might think of the concept that there's no separate self. Maybe you think of each of us being a strand in the web of life. Whatever it is, the connections are real, and this disease has illustrated that in a dramatic way. We literally breathe each other's air. Our emotions truly do impact those around us. When we see the light that bounces off the person in front of us, the light is being taken into our eyes and vice versa. That is a connection. The sense being emitted from many things around us enter our body via our noses. Think about the connection you feel for those you love, or for those you just like in different ways, or for those you dislike. That can be a powerful energy, and it is a connection. Right now, you and I are connecting. These sound waves I'm emitting are reaching you along with the understanding that they're transmitting. By listening to someone speak, we can be aligning our intentions, our energy with them, or just the opposite. And that can result in us actually working together on a common goal, or us not seeing eye to eye. Then consider our modern day society, where we're connected via high-speed transportation and communication devices of all kinds. And our connections with nature are just as powerful, since nature creates the air we breathe, the food we eat, the grounds we walk upon. We are consuming nature every day, and in the end, we will return to the soil. These are real connections, even if some of them are invisible. The coronavirus is a disease caused by acting as if we're not connected, in a world where we are intricately connected. It's also a disease that's accelerated, exacerbated, and more likely to happen again by us acting as if we're not connected, in a world where we are, in fact, intricately connected. With connection as our theme tonight, I'm going to jump into and out of a lot of different realms in the next hour. My purpose is to share with you a lot of connecting dots. We've been connecting these dots on a whole lot of issues surrounding the coronavirus since it started in the past month or two. From the cause to the impacts on our health to the solutions available, there are a lot of connections to be made that you may not have been seeing. Let's start by discussing the cause of the coronavirus. If you're like most Americans these days, at least for part of the day, you're glued to the TV or the radio or checking online news sources for the latest information on what's happening. We're all quarantined to our homes for weeks and perhaps longer in order to avoid a disease that has the potential to make millions of us sick while killing large numbers of us as well. Our own government sources were suggesting that this could have resulted in anywhere from tens of thousands to millions of deaths this year. Those estimates have fortunately come down as a result of each of us abiding by the stay-at-home order or rule or request as much as possible. It stands to reason that if we're not interacting with each other, we won't be passing along this virus via our coughs, sneezes, handshakes, touching the same objects, or just breathing. And this virus may not be a one-time event. The virus has so far appeared to be stable, meaning it's not mutating like the common flu virus does most every year. That mutation means that having gotten it this year, or having gotten vaccinated this year, you may not be protected from contracting it again next year. We can only hope that this doesn't happen. If it did, the implications of this disease are potentially long-lasting and serious to our health, our society, and our economy. With that said, it behooves us to understand where this and other diseases like it are coming from in order to avoid repeating this episode. I'm going to mention a whole bunch of viral outbreaks that happened over the past 100 years or so. Notice what all of these have in common. First, this novel coronavirus, also called SARS-CoV-2, is the third pathogenic novel coronavirus to emerge over the past two decades. This coronavirus is a disease that was passed along from an animal, likely a bat, to a person in China, probably, Someone may have eaten that bat, or may have gotten it while slaughtering the bat, or the bat may have infected a pig or any one of a number of other animals that humans then ate. It has so far resulted in almost 100,000 deaths worldwide. And by the time many of you hear this show, that number may be significantly higher. The first coronavirus was discovered in 2003. It was called SARS and is a serious type of pneumonia. That epidemic caused about 8,000 cases and nearly 800 deaths. That was a bat virus that spread to an intermediate host, a civet cat. That was then spread to humans because those humans felt like they wanted to eat that civet cat delicacy. The civet cat, if you haven't seen one, is a beautiful animal, and it's sad to think that they're being trapped and killed just for a few moments of taste pleasure. But that is, in fact, what's happening. The second coronavirus emerged in the Middle East and was also a respiratory ailment called MERS. Since it was identified, there have been about 2,500 known cases of infection and nearly 900 known deaths documented. This, too, was a bat virus, passed on to a camel in this case, and then to humans. And then there's H1N1, or the swine flu. That one was transmitted from pigs to humans and killed up to 200,000 people. And you might be surprised to know that the most widely accepted theory is that HIV was originally transmitted from primates to humans. HIV is related to a virus called SIV, which is found in primates. The virus probably crossed from primates to humans when contaminated animal blood entered cuts on the hands of humans who were butchering these SIV-infected animals for food. Consider that that act perhaps resulted in 32 million people having died from AIDS-related illnesses since the start of that epidemic. 32 million deaths from the blood of perhaps one slaughtered primate. And we've all heard about the 2018 Spanish flu pandemic. That pandemic killed more people than World War I. That is, more than 50 million people. That, too, was a bird flu. All that death came from our exploitation and killing of birds. In fact, most flu viruses come from birds. But it may not come directly from birds. Pigs may eat the bird droppings, and humans may eat the pigs, allowing for the virus to be passed along to us. The seasonal flu that killed up to 650,000 or more people last year alone, that originated from birds and pigs. By now you've gotten the obvious point. These horrendous, society-crippling viruses are mostly coming from our interaction with, use of, and exploitation of animals. Now, the mode of transmission from human to human makes sense to all of us. While we're hearing over and over again to distance, not breathe on each other, not shake hands, what has not been a clear focus of that many stories is what took place that allowed this disease to reach humans in the first place. And that's perhaps the most important part of this story going forward. Since if we can focus on what caused this, we have a chance to reduce the chance of this ever happening again. These animal-to-human diseases are called zoonotic. Now, you may think that getting these diseases from animals is pretty odd and likely pretty uncommon, despite all the outbreaks that I just listed. But the truth is very, very different. According to the Centers for Disease Control, zoonotic diseases are very common, both in the United States and around the world. So how common is very common? Well, believe it or not, scientists estimate that more than 6 out of every 10 known infectious diseases in people can be spread from animals, and 3 out of every 4 new or emerging infectious diseases in people come from animals. 3 out of 4. This is a clear and obvious problem to you and I and to experts around the world. One of the chilling takeaways from a virus story that I recently watched is that the virus that caused this coronavirus pandemic may still be in the same hosts that gave it to that person or people in China in the first place. It could be in bats, or it could be in that bat that infected a pig, and now the virus is in a herd of pigs, or one of any number of other animals that could still be carriers of this disease. The best way to stop these viruses from infecting us is pretty simple. Just stop close contact between humans and the host animals that we're eating, period. However, unfortunately, that's not happening. In fact, the more and more we push into nature, destroying the habitat of these wild animals, then more and more we will contact these potentially deadly viruses. We'll get more into that in a moment, but for now, let's say that the clearest way for us to stop the transmission of these viruses, again, is to stop eating these animals. Fortunately, toward that end, the president of China did address the issue of humans eating infected animals. He stated last month, and I quote him, "We can't be indifferent anymore." He's referring to the public health risks of eating wildlife. And in February, the People's Congress issued a decision, quote, "comprehensively prohibiting the illegal trade of wild animals, eliminating the bad habits of wild animal consumption, and protecting the health and safety of the people," end quote. While there is a ban in place, it may or may not work. They've had bans before. However, this time I think they're a bit more serious. I'll tell you one thing that you can bet your house on, and that is if people continue to demand these animal products in any country, the industry or parties involved will continue to find a way to supply them. So a long-term solution to this problem resides with many of us choosing a plant-friendly diet. And that solution, which you'll see, is the solution to so many of the other challenges on this planet, is to simply eat plants instead of animals. That applies whether you live in Wuhan, China, or in New York. Now, we've been providing clear, objective, overwhelming evidence on this show since 2007, explaining how society's very worst problems, from social to economic to health, are heavily exacerbated by our clear addiction to eating animals. And while do we eat animals, the number of animals we kill each year numbers in the trillions. That's with a T. And for each animal that's killed, there is an intermingling via touch, breath, blood, feces, urine, and bodily fluids of all kinds, not to mention the eventual ingestion of the animals when we eat them. The scope of the sanitary challenge that's created by all that raising and killing is enormous, resulting in an immense amount of environmental pollution and disease. And yet, most of us can ignore that that exists, since the slaughter itself almost always happens behind closed doors and is almost always carried out by those who don't have many other options in life. The entire COVID-19 epidemic is yet another issue that can be added to world hunger, the ongoing mass extinction of land and sea life, the wasting and polluting of our precious water and air, this disruption of our climate, the rapid disruption of our rainforests, and so much more, all of which are majorly impacted by a society that's simply eating way too much meat. And it's not just wild meat. Animal operations in the U.S. are also the source of disease, and of course a huge amount of animal suffering. Keeping so many animals in confined spaces where diseases are able to be so easily passed along to tens of thousands of other animals results in the use of antibiotics not for just for diseases, but for helping them to gain weight. It results in the perfect breeding grounds for antibiotic-resistant organisms in both humans and animals. In fact, routine use of antibiotics in farm animals is one of the top causes of the very dangerous resistance to antibiotics that the World Health Organization calls one of the biggest threats to global health, food security, and developments today. And there are hundreds of thousands of bacteriological diseases that are passed along to us by farm animals each year. In the interest of time, I'm not going to delve into that threat too much today. Suffice it to say that food-producing animals, cattle, chicken, pigs, turkeys, are the major reservoirs of many foodborne pathogens, from Campylobacter to dangerous Salmonella to E. coli 0157H7 and Listeria. We know about these things, as we've been told to treat any meat in our kitchens as if it's fecally contaminated, because studies have shown that often it is. So far, we've been talking about the direct cause of the coronavirus, which is humans coming into contact with animals, holding them, confining them, and eating them, etc. Now let's examine the cause of our coming into contact with some of these wild animals in the first place, which is our rapid and destructive incursion into the realm of wild animals. If you haven't heard this information before, take one of those deep breaths and know that we're sharing what might seem like bad news as a way of having us all get on board with creating lasting solutions. Until a problem is recognized, it can't be addressed. So in the midst of a global problem, we're fortunate enough right now to be talking together about possible solutions. That's a big positive. So let's address the issue of biodiversity loss, which is a loss of plants and animal species. Starting with the words of a report from the World Wildlife Fund and the Zoological Society of London, it stated that we're in the middle of our planet's sixth mass extinction event that has resulted in the loss of 58% of our wild animals between the years 1970 and 2012. By Dr. Rouse, our guest in last month's show, estimates, that will translate into 100% of wild animals being gone by 2026. And a UN report from the Intergovernmental Science Policy Platform on Biodiversity and Ecosystem Services, a panel with 132 member nations, including the United States, that came out in 2019. That report had nearly 150 authors from 50 nations who worked for 3 years with 7 lead co-authors from universities across the world. This was a major undertaking, and what they found was somewhat startling. First, they found that 1 million plants and animal species are on the verge of extinction, more than in any other period in human history. And that pace is accelerating. Furthermore, and this is big, they said that there were alarming implications for human survival, and I quote, "That means grave impacts on people around the world are now likely," end quote. So the losses of biodiversity that we used to think would only harm animals and nature are now undermining food and water security as well as human health. We're experiencing it right now. And this coronavirus is a perfect example of how that destruction of nature can have alarming implications for human survival. The report's authors also noted that the world's population has tripled since 1950, and that by mid-century, the world's population is expected to approach 9 billion. The resulting pressure on natural resources has been enormous, with 75% of the land environment and well more than half of the marine environment having been altered by humans. To summarize, we're destroying what's left of the natural world. Here's the part of the report that relates to connecting the dots on the coronavirus. What did that report say was causing this destruction? Well, in terms of our oceans, the greatest relative impact is direct exploitation of fish and seafood. That is, our consumption of sea life for food is destroying our oceans. In terms of our land and fresh water, they said that more than a third of the world's land surface and nearly 75% of freshwater resources are now devoted to crop or livestock production. approximately 25% of the globe's greenhouse gas emissions come from land clearing, crop production, and fertilization, with animal-based food contributing 75% of that. Farms that cut into forests that trap carbon have expanded exponentially, increasing crop production by 300% since 1970. So you might think, well, we can't do anything about farms since we have to eat, right? Well, not really, because it's not crops in general that are destroying the natural world. How do we know this? Well, fortunately, the world's most comprehensive analysis to date of the damage farming does to the planet was done in 2018 and published in the journal Science. That analysis recorded data from almost 40,000 farms in 119 countries and covering 40 food products that represent 90% of all food that is eaten. It assessed the full impact of these foods from farm to fork on land use, climate change emissions, freshwater use, and water pollution and air pollution. Now listen very carefully to the conclusions of this major report. They said that meat and dairy production uses the vast majority, 83% of all of the globe's farmlands. The problem is that while they use the vast majority of our lands, they provide just 18% of our population's calories. That fact bears repeating. 83% of the world's farmland is used to create just 18% of our calories in the form of meat and dairy products. That's an astounding statement, and it explains the main driver that's pushing humans to destroy more and more of nature, including rainforests. According to Mongabay's 419 report entitled Amazon Destruction, 65 to 70% of all Amazon rainforest land is being cleared for grazing animals. But that doesn't capture the entire scope of the damage attributable to animal production, since an additional 25 to 30% of Amazon depletion is caused by agriculture. That includes commercial agriculture, a significant part of which is growing soybeans as a livestock feed crop. So our demands for animal products is destroying nature. And when you destroy nature and come in contact with the wild animals that contain ancient viruses, you unleash such plagues as the coronavirus. That sheds some light on why the UNFAO has stated, and I quote, "Indeed, the livestock sector may well be the leading player in the reduction of biodiversity, since it is the major driver of deforestation, as well as one of the leading drivers of land degradation, pollution, climate change, overfishing, sedimentation of coastal areas, and facilitation of invasions by alien species." So how much difference would it make if we all ate plants instead of animals? And here's another alert to listen carefully. According to that largest study ever done on our world's farmlands, without meat and dairy consumption, global farmland use could be reduced by 75% or more. That's an area equivalent to the U.S., China, the European Union, and Australia combined. And we could do that while feeding the world. That's stunning. Now, while that kind of reduction isn't likely in the near future, consider the fact that if we were to take this on, so many of the world's most serious issues, from climate change to world hunger to water shortages to species extinctions and so much more, would very likely become a thing of the past, and in short order. Is it worth it? Well, I think if your reasonable objective, I and many others who have been studying and teaching about these issues for decades, think that the answer is that it is absolutely, resoundingly, yes, it is worth it. An unqualified yes. With the advent of the coronavirus and the impact that that has had on all of our lives, coupled with the fact that this kind of event could happen again, it's becoming increasingly clear that we need to remain open to a whole new way of managing this planet. That maybe, just a month or two ago, we would have been unwilling to consider. WUSB, 90.1 FM, Stony Brook. Now that we know the cause of the coronavirus and what can be done from a public policy and personal perspective to greatly lessen our risk of repeating this very dark chapter, let's talk about connecting some more dots in terms of human health. What I'm finding extremely interesting is that the same action that will lessen our chance of having another outbreak from the coronavirus, eating fewer animals, will also lessen our likelihood of suffering some of the most serious impacts from the coronavirus should we be infected. Now, what I'm going to briefly touch upon are the recognized benefits of eating a predominantly whole foods plant-based diet. What I'll tell you is that everybody from the Harvard School of Public Health and the Harvard Medical School and to the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics thinks that there are clear health benefits from eating a whole foods plant-based diet. The Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics is the world's largest organization of food and nutrition professionals, comprised of over 100,000 credentialed practitioners. They're the leader in food and nutrition issues. Here's what they have to say about cutting out meat. It is the position of the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics that appropriately planned vegetarian, including vegan diets, are healthful, nutritionally adequate, and may provide health benefits for the prevention and treatment of certain diseases. Basically, what all the health organizations are saying is that our killing of all these animals and eating of all these animal products is unnecessary. Consider that. Now, for those of you who immediately retort that eating this kind of meat or that kind of dairy products can be part of a healthy diet as well, let me say for the purposes of this conversation about reversing a global social, economic, health, and environmental crisis, I'm not going to argue the fringes. Let's agree upon the fact that we need to focus our diet for the most part on whole, unprocessed foods that grow from the ground. I think the problem that arises when talking about this issue is that people get stuck in the weeds. They start worrying about the details when looking at an urgent global issue that needs to be addressed now. Another problem I see is that people get lost by asking the wrong question. They may ask, "What's the best diet for me?" Then they might go onto the internet and get 50 different opinions from 50 different health gurus and come up with 2,500 variations on the truth. Asking what's the best diet for me is so very, very 1900s. It's no longer an appropriate question. In a world with 7 billion people and rising, where over 800 million people are chronically hungry at the same time that more than 2 billion people are obese, that question doesn't work anymore. It's no longer appropriate in a world where the animals raised for food out-eat us, they outnumber, and they outweigh all the humans on our planet. And where a large part of the food fed to the animals is wasted in a perfect model of inefficiency. Scientists have calculated that by cycling our plant foods through animals, instead of eating the plants directly, an average of 90% of the energy from the food chain is lost. The best efficiency in our food system takes place when humans eat plant foods directly, taking out the middleman of the cow, the pig, the chicken, the turkey, the goat, the fish, etc. In 2020, any serious discussion about food resources and world hunger needs to address animal consumption as a core factor. We have more than enough land to grow plant foods to feed everybody, as we've discussed. So the right question to ask is, how can we possibly eat as little meat and dairy as possible, given that those foods are major players in so many of the world's most urgent and serious problems? When you ask that question, you end up with answers that will serve not only you, but humanity. And that's where I see the greatest nutritional minds in the world focusing right now. It used to be that preventative health organizations would focus on diet, exercise, smoking. They'd focus on how to reduce one's risk of the preventable chronic degenerative diseases such as heart disease, diabetes, cancer, and more. But it ended there. They didn't consider the global health implications of our collective food choices. That has changed, and it's very exciting to see. I'm talking about the EAT Lancet Commission on Food, Planet, Health that came out in 2019. This report was pulled together by 30 world-leading scientists from across the globe. It was the first full scientific review of what would constitute what they call a planetary health diet. Exactly what we're talking about today. The diet that these health experts, some of the best health experts in the world, collaborated on was described as a win-win, according to those scientists, as it would save at least 11 million people a year from deaths caused by unhealthy food, while preventing the collapse of the natural worlds that humanity depends upon. With 10 billion people expected to live on Earth by 2050, a continuation of today's unsustainable diets would inevitably mean even greater health problems and severe global warming. Now, what would that diet call for, that planetary health diet? What would have to change? Globally, the diet would require red meat and sugar consumption to be cut in half, while vegetables, fruit, beans, and nuts would be doubled. But in specific places, the changes are even more stark. Europeans would need to eat 77% less meat and 15 times more nuts and seeds to meet the guidelines. For North Americans to eat the best diet for themselves and the planet, we'd need to eat 84% less meat, but 6 times more beans and lentils. That might seem unlikely, but think about that in the context of the coronavirus. In the context of the fact that we are now starting to see how the destruction of our planet's biodiversity also might powerfully threaten our very existence. I'm hoping that the coronavirus, with everything horrible that it's bringing us, might bring us to a place of opening, to some much-needed change in our world that might, perhaps, not have been possible just a few months ago. Speaking of COVID-19, let's get back there and connect a few more dots. You've heard that there are preconditions that put us at greater risk for serious implications should we contract the coronavirus. Those include people with chronic lung disease, moderate to severe asthma, and we'll talk more about this later, people who have serious heart conditions, people who are immune compromised for one of many reasons, people with severe obesity, body mass index of 40 or higher, people with diabetes, people with chronic kidney disease undergoing dialysis, and people with liver disease. Another hopeful aspect of this horrible disease is that the same dietary solution to the causes of this disease and to the causes of the biodiversity loss that put us into direct contact with wild animals in the first place can also go a long way toward reducing our vulnerability to some of the worst health impacts. That's right, serious heart conditions, cancer, severe obesity and diabetes, hypertension, and more are all conditions that are largely preventable via lifestyle and diet modification, including a whole food plant-based diet. There's very little debate about that. A whole foods plant-based diet is simply one that focuses on fulfilling our nutritional requirements with foods that grow from the ground in as unprocessed a state as possible. I'll repeat that. That's a diet that focuses on us getting our nutritional requirements with those foods that grow from the ground in as unprocessed a state as possible. Easy peasy, right? Google it. Whole foods plant-based diet. Now, while we're talking about diseases attributable to eating animals, let's stay on the subject of public health, but veer off a little bit. We've covered the dangers posed to humans on planet Earth from air pollution for many years. By now, some of you have memorized the facts that, according to the World Health Organization, more than 7 million people die each year from air pollution. In the U.S., the number of annual deaths ranges from 100,000 to 200,000 per year. It's hard to imagine just how many deaths are associated with air pollution. Consider the fact that in China, air pollution causes an estimated 1.1 million deaths per year and costs the Chinese economy $38 billion. That's between 3,000 and 4,000 people killed each day. However, since the worldwide lockdown has been in place, the air has gotten a lot cleaner. What impact has that clean air had on China's public health? Well, about a month ago, Stanford Earth Sciences Professor Marshall Burke answered that question. He projected that 2 months of coronavirus lockdown had saved the lives of, listen to this, 77,000 Chinese children and elderly from air pollution alone. The number of lives saved in China alone because of the clean air due to the lockdown due to coronavirus is roughly 20 times the number of lives lost to the virus. The human and economic toll of that many people dying every year from something that's preventable, air pollution, is, as I just mentioned, enormous. And yet, we've never heard about putting the world on lockdown to control air pollution. Something so deadly that it is itself a pandemic. The great thing about air pollution, if there can be a great thing about it, is that we now have both the wisdom and the know-how and the technology to become a much more clean energy global economy. Additionally, a clean energy economy will employ many, many more people than a fossil fuel, dirty, dangerous economy. More jobs, better health, and obviously less climate change. What we've been lacking, however, which is apparent especially in the last few years, is the political will to save lives. What if the office of the presidents were used in a proactive way to educate the American public about the enormous benefits of a rapid shift from fossil fuels to clean energy? In the same way as today we have briefings on the coronavirus, we could have regular briefings on air pollution and climate change and our country's great move toward clean energy. It's entirely possible, but would require a true leader. While the topic of climate change is not something we're focused on today, I will mention that from my perspective, climate change is, in the next few decades, something that will make COVID-19 look like a walk in the park. But that's all I'll say about it right now. So what's the connection between clean air and coronavirus? New evidence recently emerged that dirty air makes COVID-19 more lethal. It didn't surprise anyone who followed the science of air pollution, but the scale of the effect was striking. The study, which must still undergo peer review for publication, found that the tiny pollutant particles known as PM2.5, breathed over many years, sharply raises the chances of dying from the virus. So when you breathe in this pollutant over many years, your risk of dying from the virus increases substantially. Researchers from Harvard University's School of Public Health analyzed data on PM2.5 levels and COVID-19 deaths from about 3,000 U.S. counties, covering 98% of the U.S. population. Counties that average just 1 microgram per cubic meter more PM2.5 in the air had a COVID-19 death rate that was 15% higher. If you're getting COVID, and I'm quoting now, and you have been breathing polluted air, it's really putting gasoline on a fire, end quote. And that's according to Francesca Dominici, a Harvard biostatistic professor and the study's senior author. That's because the fine particles penetrate deeply into the body, promoting hypertension, heart disease, breathing troubles, and diabetes, all of which increase complications in coronavirus patients. The particles also weaken the immune system and fuel inflammation in the lungs and respiratory tract, adding to the risk of both getting COVID-19 and of having severe symptoms. Even before the new Harvard study, scientists were convinced that air pollution was likely worsening COVID-19's impact, in addition to the wide-ranging health damage it causes on its own. A 2003 study of the outbreak of SARS, the closest relative of the new coronavirus, found that death rates in China's most polluted areas were twice as high as in the least polluted areas. Additionally, scientists also believe viruses may bond with pollution particles, enabling them to remain in the air longer and helping them to make their way into the body. The flip side is that even temporarily cleaner air can help flatten the curve of the pandemic, easing the burden on healthcare systems by reducing the number of people who experience severe COVID-19 symptoms, as well as symptoms of other diseases. Cleaner pandemic skies have other benefits too, as they should also reduce other pressures on hospitals struggling with COVID-19 cases. In addition to the cumulative effects of breathing dirty air for years, a large body of evidence shows that short-term changes in air quality have an immediate impact on heart attacks, strokes, and all other emergency room visits. All increase when pollution spikes. So clean air, specifically reduced levels of PM2.5 pollution, are important both for the prevention and recovery from COVID-19. Now you have to ask, and there are some more connections, where is all that PM2.5 fine particulate pollution coming from in the U.S. and other countries? The answer to that will, as I said, connect a whole new set of dots for you. Here we go. Usually when one thinks of deadly air pollution, we think of industrial smokestacks, motor vehicles. But according to a study published in May of 2016, Geophysical Research Letters, emissions from farms outweigh all other human sources of this fine particulate air pollution in much of the U.S., Europe, China, and Russia. The main source is fumes, mainly in the form of ammonia, which enters the air as a gas from nitrogen-rich fertilizers and animal waste that combine in the air with industrial emissions. So it's this ammonia. According to the UN's FAO, 64% of human-induced ammonia emissions come from, ready for this, the livestock sector. The resultant solid particles formed, PM2.5, are a huge source of disease and mortality, worldwide estimated to cause millions of deaths each year. So the very damaging particulate matter pollution that might increase our risk of contracting COVID-19 while worsening its impacts on those who breathe it in is also related to livestock feed crops and animal wastes. I'll recap just some of what I've outlined today. First, the cause of the coronavirus and other viruses that have killed likely over 100 million Americans over the last 100 years or so are animals. If we didn't feel the need to raise and kill those animals for food and other reasons, the contact with them that has caused all this death and suffering would not be taking place. Additionally, we know future pandemics will be coming from our use of animals in years to come. And there is a clear way to avoid that. Second, COVID-19 and other animal-derived diseases come from our continued incursion into the natural world where we contact ancient animal viruses. One of the main driving forces in the destruction of nature and the loss of biodiversity on our planet is animal agriculture, driven by our demands for meat. It's responsible for the majority of Central American rainforest depletion and is putting us on target to have killed all wild animals on our planet in the near future. Some say by 2026. Three, a clear way that we can protect ourselves from the worst impacts of the coronavirus and similar animal-derived viruses in the future is to cut meat, processed food, and junk foods out of our diets. 4. The very damaging particulate matter pollution that might increase our risk of contracting COVID-19 while worsening its impact on those who breathe it in is also very much related to agriculture and specifically livestock production. At the beginning of the show, I talked about the connections that exist around us and how those connections are clear and verifiable, regardless of whether you're spiritual, religious, atheist, or anything in between. There's another principle that comes to mind that I believe is similarly obvious, regardless of whether you're believers in reaping what you sow or karma or neither of the two, and that is our use and abuse of trillions of animals each year, when there's no nutritional need to do so, is impacting our society in every way, ranging from being a cause of starvation to the destruction of our life support system and the weakening of our bodies. We are all connected. You see how you need to stay away from everybody, because we are so connected by our breath and the air and by what we touch. I'm making a case that it's worthy of all our consideration to act in such a way that treats our world and our fellow inhabitants with the respect that they deserve. And because we're intricately connected, doing so will serve all of humanity and the world for this and future generations. We connected a lot of dots, and I find it amazing that so much of it comes back to the same thing. So much of it comes to the issue that we've been discussing for decades. Just one more example of how showing the world and its inhabitants kindness may save us a whole lot of suffering. You know, in the Buddhist tradition, they talk about suffering coming from seeing the world in a way that it isn't really. So we're viewing the world as if everything is permanent, and treating it that way results in us suffering because, in fact, everything is impermanent. Whether it's our bodies or the things that we buy or the people around us, it's all impermanent. And so living as if it's permanent is causing a lot of suffering. It's like a salmon or a fish swimming upstream. The salmon have to do it. But it's like swimming upstream when all you have to do is swim with the flow, and all that suffering would be gone. We can do the same with this. We can stop all the suffering. We know how to do it. And not only do we know how to do it, but it's becoming a movement. It's becoming a big movement in our world to be part of the group of society that is fully engaged in reducing that suffering. And on that note, we'll end for the night. My name is Bob DiBenedetto, and I want to thank you for listening to the Healthy Planet radio program. I'll be with you again on Friday, May 1st, at the same time. That's right, 6 p.m. For more info on Healthy Planet, our events, our radio show, our website is www.healthyplanetusa.org, and our Facebook page is Healthy Planet USA. To get on our email list for all upcoming events, email us at info@healthyplanetusa.org. And when I'm not here, be sure to listen at the same time to Natural Alternatives, and you'll hear cutting-edge information on health and environmental issues from really great hosts. That's Fridays at 6 p.m. Until next time, stay strong, stay separate, keep moving. Relax when you can. Make your voice in this world by speaking up virtually for what's right. Even though these times are challenging, even though we don't know where we're coming out on the other side, stick with it. Be kind to those around you, including our amazing animal friends, and enjoy this beautiful world that we all share. Good night.
Out where the river broke, the bloodwood and the desert oak, holding wrecks and boiling diesels, steam at 45 degrees.
The time has come to save.
Has global warming finally gotten your attention? Well, it's not just about pleasantly balmy winters. Other impacts include disruption of our food supply, hunger, warm climate pest infestations, rising sea waters, resulting in displacement of millions, and much more. You don't need to wait for the government to act to change the dangerous course that the vast majority of scientists say we're on. Healthy Planet is a non-profit organization that teaches that many of the world's most daunting health and environmental problems have their solution in the choices we make every day. One of the most important actions you can take to reduce global warming gases is to eat lower on the food chain. That's right, less meat equals less pollution. In fact, a new UN report states that livestock production is a greater source of global warming gases than transportation, as well as being a leading cause of water pollution and loss of biodiversity in the world. And reducing your meat consumption can pay you back personally, with reduced risks of cardiovascular disease, diabetes, and cancer, to name a few. For more on this, and to attend Healthy Planet's popular educational and social events, call them at 631-421-5591 or visit them on the web at www.healthy-planet.org. A healthy planet is ours to create.
Ever think of light bulbs as being cool? They are if you choose energy-efficient bulbs and fixtures that have earned the government's Energy Star label. They're so hot, they're cool. Because they burn cool and last up to 10 times longer, You save money and oodles of energy. Change a light, help the environment, save some green. The solution is as close as your nearest lamp socket. Brighten your environmental future. From the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency.